Welcome, friends. Can you believe it's April already? And you know what that means, don't you? That's right. Alligator mating season. For 2 months, I got to deal with this nonsense. And don't let me catch you doing that again, Chester. You'll go blind by June at this rate. You should see my search history. Asian alligators uncensored. Unbelievable. Anyway, come on in, friend. That's better. You know, something just occurred to me. Why not visit simplyscarypodcast.com and sign up as a patron? You can get their entire catalog dating back to 2012. Just click the Patrons area tab, and for as little as $5 a month, you get the distinguished title of patron. Not to mention all the horror you can handle. Available to download or stream. Our tale tonight comes courtesy of author Alfred Alley and Velox Books. This one's from the collection Find Us and Other Stories. It's available on Amazon and Audible.com. So without further delay, from author Alfred Alley, I give you The Orb Weaver. They were a trio. Exploring the winding creek and plodding through the soggy banks and shallow waters. Hallie, the tallest, wore overalls and a shirt she received from the previous year's school field day. Andrea, Hallie's oldest friend, in black shorts and a sleeveless shirt bearing a bejeweled unicorn. Finally, there was Becca in red. She wore red shoes, jeans with a wide red stripe down the sides of the legs, and of course a red knit dress. Their destination was an old bridge, but only in the sense that they felt they needed a destination. For the moment, there was the quiet and the woods. They enjoyed a chance to talk and escape the ears and eyes of their parents, to air their excitement and anxiety about eighth grade. Hallie could never say for sure when they lost Becca. She was talking to Andrea and realized Becca wasn't beside her. She looked back, but her friend had not fallen behind. Becca was gone. They called out softly, confused. Their voices rose with the rise of fear until they were screaming for Becca, running off briefly in different directions before returning to the same creek bed. They could not hear Becca. They could not see her. They even scanned the grounds for prints, but all they found were all three sets in the muddy portion of the creek bed. They were standing in a long, dry stretch in the creek when she vanished, so again, there was no way to definitively pinpoint when Becca disappeared. Somewhere between that point and the point they realized she was missing, about 100 yards, Becca vanished. They ran to Hallie's house. The double-wide trailer house off the White Rock driveway was the closest home. Andrea sobbed, and Hallie's mother called the police. A search started immediately. Police search and rescue teams, volunteers, and members of all three girls' families searched. They were all clad in bright vests and following strict walking patterns side by side through the thick woods and along the creek. The sweltering heat continued to dry out the water, leaving mounds of sun-baked silt and exposed flaky clay, gradually erasing what little evidence there was of their presence. The adults in their lives assured Hallie and Andrea that Becca would be found. Becca had to be found. People just don't vanish without a trace. 3 days into the search, a volunteer vanished. They would find him the next day, dehydrated and confused, sitting beside a tree trunk. He scratched at the poison ivy rashes on his arm and smacked at mosquitoes even when indoors. Hallie would hear more as an adult. Until then, parents were quick to put a lid on the story, and in a town that small, this was no minor feat. The story went that this man remembered walking through an area of the woods ignored by the volunteers. A voice called out, and he saw an old woman standing in the trees. She was bent and pale, with long gray hair loosely plaited. She motioned him to the cabin. When an interviewer asked him about the cabin, the volunteer was confused.
It wasn't there at first, but than it was. I must not have noticed it at first.
Now the search included a quest to find the old woman in case she discovered Becca, or saw her at least. They never found the building, and when asking the only witness, he seemed unable to pin down the general appearance of the building. The image of the woman in the cabin seemed to distort and twist when he attempted to recall his experience, like her very memory was trying to hide. After 45 days, the officials called off the search. After 123 days, Becca's family called off their own search. Neither Becca nor the old woman were ever found. Hallie lost two friends that day. Andrea refused to respond to Hallie's messages and would walk away without saying a word if Hallie approached her at school. The rest of the student body seemed to pick up the general vibe in the air, and Hallie found herself alone in the cafeteria, alone on the playground, alone in the gym. She never forced a confrontation or exchanged words. She instead watched her world wordlessly fall apart. 3 months after Becca vanished, Hallie, now 12, started her own search. She begrudgingly admitted her parents may have been right about keeping her room clean as she rifled through the dirty clothes and incomplete art projects that littered the room. Finally, she found it. She took her dog with her, a 4-year-old black lab named Rose, and left the house early on Saturday. Hallie told her mother she was just going to walk around the neighborhood. When her mother wasn't looking, Hallie crawled over the short wooden fence and ran towards the creek that ebbed behind the house. Her dog bounded beside her. When she reached the place she lost her friend, she pulled out an old t-shirt Becca left behind at her house and held it to the dog's nose. She had seen this action in enough movies.
Find her. Go on, find her.
The dog seemed confused, moving her head back and away from the balled-up shirt Hallie waved under her nose. Finally, she seemed to catch something on the wind. She looked around, then stood perfectly still. The dog lowered herself and growled. Her growl started guttural and elevated in volume, escaping in loud barks.
Rose?
Hallie asked.
What is it?
The dog tore out of the dry creek bed and into the thick green foliage on the bank. She barked in a light, almost frantic tone. Hallie struggled to keep up. She could hear Rose's growls and barks growing fainter until finally they stopped. When they did, Hallie looked around. She didn't recognize these trees. She didn't recognize the terrain at all. There was no humming creek to draw her ear, only the sounds of birds and insects. She called out for Rose. She was lost. Hallie walked and tripped through the brush, reaching out towards tree trunks for balance as she pulled herself through thorns and poison ivy. Sticky burrs clung to her clothing, and she tried to brush them away, only to relocate them a few inches from their original positions.
Lost friend!
Hallie stopped. To her left, a clearing in the woods. No, she went this way already, hadn't she? There was no clearing then. But there, a clearing with short grass and a thin path trod into the ground leading to a small squat cabin. On the porch, an old man. He wore a long-sleeved flannel shirt, unbuttoned, and a white sleeveless undershirt. His pants were brown and fit loosely. He shuffled to the edge of the porch and plodded down the steps. His skin was pale even against the stark white hair on his face and head. He stopped, but raised one arm to get her attention.
Friend, are you lost?
Hallie didn't move.
I'm looking for my dog.
Way out here?
The old man asked.
We were looking for my friend. She got lost out here.
He stepped off the porch and Hallie took a step back. He saw her face and backed up as well.
You say you lost a dog and a friend.
A girl. She was my age, about my height. Red shirt, red shoes, jeans. Her hair is longer than mine.
If I see something, I'll let you know. But tell you the truth, I don't get many visitors out here. What about your dog?
Black lab. Her name is Rose. She's very sweet.
The old man nodded. He placed a hand behind him and felt around as he lowered himself to the stairs. He took a seat and exhaled loudly.
I'll keep my ears and eyes open. But it's just me out here these days.
You live alone?
Hallie asked.
Always have. Always will.
He chuckled.
Just the way things is, I suppose.
Then he took a breath as if his excursion down the steps had truly winded him.
I gotta go,
Hallie said.
It was nice meeting you.
Same, young lady,
the old man smiled.
If you're looking for the creek, turn around, look at that tree. The one without the leaves. When you reach it, you'll see the creek, and that'll get you home.
Hallie nodded. She turned around and called out for Rose.
Good luck,
the old man called out again. She found her way back to the creek and returned home without Rose. She told her parents everything, and again a search operation commenced to find the old man and discover what he may or may not know. When Hallie came home from school that Friday, her parents were whispering in the kitchen. Hallie lowered her backpack onto the couch and stepped gingerly towards the kitchen. They were talking about the new search and how two more volunteers had yet to report back in. Seventh grade changed for Hallie with the first shoulder check. Then the nicknames, Killer, Homicidal Hallie, the usual. Rumors spread about Hallie going into the woods and finding someone. With the disappearance of the two searchers shortly after, people wondered aloud, behind her in class or in the hall, whether she had something to do with Becca's absence. Maybe she knew who it really was. Maybe she led them down there. A group of kids cornered her under the bleachers in the gym. They pushed her against the wall, demanding to know what happened to Becca. Through the circling group of sneering faces, she could see Andrea. Andrea pulled her hands into the sleeves of her red long-sleeved shirt and held her hidden fist to her chest.
I don't know what happened. Andrea was there. Andrea!
The faces turned to Andrea, who looked at the floor and replied that Hallie was the one who wanted to explore the creek. Hallie had led the way. Hallie realized as the first fist made contact with her stomach that no one had ever hit her before. Not really. Not outside of a gentle jab to the shoulder in jest. Anger behind the fist was new, and she doubled over and sobbed. She closed her eyes and waited for the crowd to disperse, but they stood around her, taunting, until the bell drew them away. One of the missing searchers wandered into town 2 days later, dazed and extremely dehydrated. He was weak, coughing, and barely able to stand, his skin pale and tinged with yellow. The police found layers of fine dust on his clothing, bits of spiderweb on his shoulder. A local clinic diagnosed him with leptospirosis, caused by prolonged exposure to rat feces. The best guess was that he had spent most of his time away in a building, trapped in a tight space and breathing in very toxic particles. He had no memory of it. He had no memory of what had happened to his partner. He said they were searching the woods, following the directions laid out by Hallie, when he saw a cabin. The building was different than Hallie described. Two stories and with a fresh coat of brown paint, a green door, and green on the window trimmings. A little girl waved at them, and they excitedly approached, hoping they had finally found Becca, somehow safe and sound.
It wasn't her, he said. We saw that when we got closer.
Then blank. Until he awoke, his stomach burning, his skin on fire and desperately thirsty, alone in the open wilderness. He found his way out of the woods and entered the city. Again, more searchers and police entered the woods, a small area of maybe 400 acres, a place much too small to hide a cabin, or multiple ones if the man's story was to be believed. When asked to describe the girl, he would struggle. He could see her running to them and waving. He could see her so clearly. But when asked to answer basic questions about height, hairstyle, clothing, the image would distort. For Hallie, the harassment continued, as did her resolve to find out what happened to her friend, what happened to Rose and all the others now missing in the trees and thorny brush. Hallie hid the bruises, and the harassment online didn't extend to public profiles her parents could see. So when Hallie said she was going to a friend's house, her parents had no reason to doubt her story. She took her school bag, stuffed it with energy bars and bottles of water. She threw one strap over her shoulder and walked toward town. At the park, she could double back along the railroad track and entered the familiar parcel of woods from there. Again, she left on Saturday morning. She would stay until late afternoon, when her mom would need her to check in. Hallie kicked at the soft rocks in the dried creek bed. She came to the place where Becca vanished, where everything started. The grass and trees seemed taller. They seemed to extend over her, reaching down from above. The noise of the forest continued unabated. The animals gave no notice to her presence, or to the presence of anything else. She recalled no sudden silence of eerie or quiet when her friend disappeared, or when she found the cabin. The indifference chilled her. She knew behind her were the railroad tracks, a clear visual. Becca couldn't have been taken that way without Hallie and Andrea seeing her. She didn't walk ahead of them, and there were no tracks in the muddy patches behind them. That meant only one direction, towards the cabin, toward Rose's last known whereabouts. Hallie wondered if she would find bleached bone, bits of clothing. In all the true crime podcasts she listened to and shows she binged, people described coming across a body in the woods. She looked at crime scene photos, anything she could find to know where to look, how to find Becca. The witnesses were rattled, and she knew that image would be burned into her mind, just as the pictures she found online were. But she had to find Becca, one way or another. The cold front she looked forward to stalled somewhere north of them, so there would be no reprieve from the stifling heat. No breeze cut through the thick woods, as Hallie stumbled over bushes and tore shoulder first through low-hanging branches and smaller trees, all of which seemed to grow into one mass of green and brown. She called out for Becca. She called out for Rose. She whistled and held a small, worn, squeaky ball in the air above her, squeezing it over and over. Hallie wondered if she was lost, or if anyone at her school would look for her. What was one more, after all?
Friend!
She stopped. Turning slightly to her left, she saw the same cabin sitting on a patch of trimmed grass. The place seemed almost carved from the woods surrounding it. There he was on the porch, the old man in flannel. He seemed light, almost bounding down the steps. His beard appeared trim, less scraggly, and his eyes were bright.
Lost friend,
he asked.
We met before,
Hallie said.
I thought so. You were looking for your dog and your school friend.
Still am.
He stepped back and shook his head.
My, my. Tragedy. It's a hot one today. Care for a glass of water?
He turned around and walked to the porch. Hallie called out that she wasn't entering a stranger's home.
Wouldn't expect you to. Tell you what.
He looked back at her.
Got a spigot round the side. I'll bring you a glass. Fill it up and have a rest.
Hallie felt the heat on her, like the sun was turned up a notch by unseen hands. The rays beat down on her head, and she became desperate for a drink, desperate for shade.
Here.
He startled her. Had he gone inside already? He held out a small green drinking glass. She took it and thanked him. He pointed to the side of the house, and she found a spigot. The water came out like ice. The glass felt chilled in her hand. She gulped it down and quickly refilled it.
The heat sneaks up on you,
he called from the porch. Hallie walked around to the front and found the old man seated in a chair by his front door.
It does,
Hallie said.
I hope you find your friend. I do.
What's your name?
Hallie asked.
Hinkle,
he called out. Hallie left him and walked back, finding the creek again with ease, without a moment of confusion. She looked around the creek bed and glanced toward the once muddy bank that held the footprints of her and her friend, long since trampled away. She returned home, changing into cleaner clothes. Her parents asked her how her hangout was. She didn't mention the old man. Hallie didn't find an old man named Hinkle online, but she didn't want to ask around either. Her isolation at school afforded her plenty of time to research, and she was drawn to the accounts of missing people in the small patches of forest surrounding her town. Patches of forest vanishing into housing developments and business parks, shrinking every year. Compared to other wilderness areas in her state, the number of lost people, a total of 7 at the moment, wasn't necessarily noteworthy. People get lost, meth labs explode, hunting accidents happen. They could also become turned around. The same thing happened to her twice while looking for Becca. But each time, her new friend called out to her. She began visiting him more. She basked in the kindness, offered freely and without pity. After several visits, she was finally sitting on his porch, telling about her struggles at school, her guilt over her missing friend, her guilt over her missing dog. At times, she felt like the monster the children called her, this creature leading others to their doom in the woods.
Horseshit,
he said. He spat on the porch.
Horseshit.
Can't help thinking it, though,
Hallie said. She leaned back in the chair. She could see vultures swooping low over the trees in the distance, and she pushed an unpleasant thought out of her head.
You know what?
Hinkle stood.
You should see something. Come on.
He threw open the screen door and the front door, rushing inside the cabin. The screen door rattled and clapped against the door frame.
Hinkle?
Hallie asked.
In here,
he called from inside. Hallie gripped the metal lawn chair's arms and pulled herself up. She entered the cabin. The place looked like the classic image of a hunting cabin. Rustic furniture, bookshelves crammed with books and magazines, and at least 2 deer mounts and the head of a large wild hog on display. There were no pictures, though, none at all. Other than thick red curtains on either side of the windows, the walls were bare. She could see the hallway entrance in the living room, a short hallway leading to a bathroom and a bedroom. Hinkle stood in the center of the hall, pulling on a string dangling from the ceiling.
What you doing?
Hallie asked.
I have a gift for you. Might lift your spirits.
He pulled on the string and a ladder to the attic lowered. He unfolded it, the springs clanging and vibrating. He stepped on the first step, straightening the ladder. The wood groaned.
Well, go on then,
Hinkle said, motioning to the open attic. Hallie stepped forward. She looked at the smiling man and the attic open like a mouth, the rungs like rows of teeth in her mind.
What's wrong?
He asked. He kept smiling, his grin frozen. He again motioned to the attic, trying to usher her into the dark. Hallie backed up.
I need to get home next time,
Hallie said. She couldn't explain it, but everything in her body urged her to run. Not leave, run. An animal panic rose in her chest. Her brain buzzed. The old man stopped smiling. He spoke now, very quiet.
I learned a way to sing. I learned a way to sing so they wanna sleep. So they wanna rest their eyes.
Hallie felt frozen in place. The buzzing in her brain dulled. She felt like a fog enveloped her. The old man walked closer to her. She watched him approach, no longer smiling. He wore a very stern expression as he recited something between a poem and a song.
I sing them inside. Sing them to sleep. I learned a way to sing.
He whispered now, resting a hand on her shoulder.
Go into the attic, child.
Hallie walked, not away, not into the woods, but to the thin wooden ladder. She placed a foot on the bottommost rung and stepped up. She almost lost her balance.
Easy now,
Hinkle whispered. She almost had to crawl.
Wait,
he whispered. His voice sounded uncertain.
Wait.
She kept moving up the attic stairs, approaching the door.
This isn't... No,
Hinkle said to himself. Something moved in the dark in front of her. A mass sitting up and crawling toward the light from the open doorway.
Stop,
the old man said. Hallie froze. The fog lifted and she dropped back off the ladder and scrambled to her feet.
What was that?
She asked.
What the fuck was that?
Go,
Hinkle said.
Just go. Get out of here.
What is happening?
Just go,
Hinkle roared. Hallie ran and found her way back to the creek with ease. Hallie returned home after 20 years to a town she left at the first chance. Now she returned to bury her mother, her last surviving parent, far sooner than she anticipated. She didn't think about Hinkle, outside of strange dreams or occasionally seeing an old man in the distance, resembling him enough to draw the breath out of her. But when Hallie found the local paper folded on the kitchen counter, she read a headline about the 20th anniversary of the spate of missing persons cases in her small town. She remembered Hinkle then. She remembered how she tried to return, tried to see if it was him, to see what was in that attic. She remembered how after nearly a dozen attempts until she left town for college, she never found the old man or the cabin again. She told no one, not even her mother. Hallie wondered what her mother would say now. Probably what she needed to hear, but didn't want to. She couldn't stay in the house a second longer, not with memories, both unpleasant and unpleasantly pleasant, attacking her from all sides. Hallie decided to take a walk in the woods. As a child, the woods seemed a vast and unexplored wilderness, even though housing developments penned it on all sides. Now the entire area shrunk considerably. The creek was flanked by walking paths, and they cleared much of the brush and wiry links of thorn she fought through to find the cabin. Even the trees seemed smaller, the wilderness cowed. She found out, through brief forays into her town's subreddit and Twitter mentions, that her town has suffered 3 additional missing persons cases since she left. That doesn't even factor in the missing pets, as the wooded area and adjacent park have a reputation for eating pets. Hallie looked around at the couples on the path, the occasional jogger, and felt apprehension. Would someone recognize her? Would they ask why she was going into the woods? She then scoffed. She left town as a ghost, faded and forgotten, Who would conjure her memory now? Hallie stepped off the path and took two quick hops across the creek. She pushed her way into the brush and started her walk. A few yards in, and the noise of the crowds in the highway muffled, becoming a gentle roar like distant thunder. After about 15 minutes of walking, struggling through brush that seemed to cling to her tighter than in childhood, she came to a clearing of sorts. A small patch of grass, tall but free of trees, the canopy above closing in to shield it from the sun and sky. Here, she thought. Right here. Hallie looked behind her and then turned back, only surprised for a moment to see the cabin and the once empty patch of ground. There it stood, smaller than she remembered, with faded paint and broken windows. One board on the front porch steps curled upwards. Another was missing completely.
"Friend?"
Hallie called out. No answer. She tiptoed up the porch, watching for holes, and tapped on the front door.
"Hinkle? It's Hallie. Been a long time."
No answer except for the slight creak as the door partially opened. She pushed it open and stepped inside. The humidity in the room seemed oppressive, sweltering compared with the slight chill outside.
"Hello?"
She saw him then, seated in a recliner, a quilt in red and black squares pulled up to his chin. Sunken cheeks, his chin stuck out. His eyes were set deep into his head, his skin a faded gray.
"Hello, Hallie," he croaked.
"Hinkle, are you okay?"
Hallie asked. She took a step toward him. He shivered under the quilt.
"I'm tired," he whispered. "Not many visitors these days. Getting older. You'll see one day."
"I'm seeing now. Already got the aching back a few decades too early. And man, do teenagers just piss me off."
Hinkle smiled. He nodded.
"Can I get you something?"
Hallie asked. She wanted to ask about her friend, even about her dog. She wanted to know if it was him. She wanted to know what he was.
"I'm just hungry is all,"
he chuckled.
"Old and hungry."
"Well, do you want me to fix you anything? Where's the kitchen?"
Hallie asked. She glanced around the cabin, dusty and claustrophobic. She could make out the bathroom and a bedroom, but no kitchen.
"Kitchen? Never needed it,"
Hinkle said.
"What?"
He chuckled again.
"I'll get you something. Then I have some questions,"
Hallie said. Hinkle nodded, twisting under the blanket and pulling it up tighter under his chin. He shivered again.
"Missed you," he said. "Not many friends."
Hallie moved further into the house, looking down the hall for a kitchen entrance. Surely he had something to eat. She turned back when he spoke and saw the recliner rocking gently.
"What did you say?"
Hallie asked. She approached the chair and found the blanket draped over it. Hinkle missing. She called out for him and scanned the room. She threw open the front door and stepped onto the porch. She returned inside. She called out for him again and heard a thud in the attic above her. She could hear scraping, like something large being dragged around the attic floor. She walked to the hall and stood under the attic door. She gently grasped the string hanging from the door and pulled it down. The springs wailed and clanged as she unfolded the attic stairs.
"Hinkle, I'm coming up there, just so you know."
She started walking up the stairs, reaching up and grabbing the edge of the doorway. She pulled herself up into the attic space. Her eyes struggled to adjust to the dark. She pulled her phone from her pocket and shined the flashlight around his face. She saw something twinkle in the far corner. Hallie stood up and ducked down slightly to avoid banging her head on the exposed rafters. All in all, the attic was almost as large as the house, another floor essentially. She stepped on something that crackled. She pointed the light at her feet and saw a series of thin white strands spread out across the floor. She thought about spider webs, and a familiar feeling returned. Run. Run now. She followed the web to a mass of white and gray threads wrapped around a lump in thousands of strands. She could make out a pair of red shoes. Becca. She moved closer, looking at a bit of the lump with several points grouped together. Fingers. Skeletal fingers. She felt lightheaded, her mind fogged over, and she fought it. She heard the scrape and turned to her left, illuminating a shape crawling to her. In the years since, Hallie has recalled this memory thousands of times, tens of thousands. She's never told a soul, and even alone she dared not say it out loud. But she saw something like a large spider. The segment she assumed was a head covered in tiny black orbs, all encircling two massive orbs shining in the light. Eyes. Sparse layers of white and gray hair with bald patches that peeled and oozed covered the spider. A long spindly arm covered in thin wiry hairs raised slightly, not enough to lift completely off the ground, and moved toward her. The spider dragged its massive frame across the floor. Then the creature dropped. The spider heaved and shook. The spider was still.
Hinkle,
Hallie said. The creature exhaled. Hallie swore the head turned up toward her. Now, years later, the memory is enough to make her itch, her skin crawl. She instinctively balls up and fights tears at the memory alone. But faced with the creature then, she felt no fear. Maybe her mind struggled to make sense of a being that shouldn't be. But she felt pity for this dying creature, but only for a moment. Then she remembered the red shoes. She backed away and shone the light around the attic. Massive lumps of webbed corpses shoved against the walls and in every corner of the attic space. Most appeared to be small animals, but a few were human. Hallie looked back at the spider. It made no movement. She looked around and found someone's cell phone, an old Nokia covered in dust on the floor. She picked it up and tossed it to the creature. It bounced off the arachnid's body. No movement. She left the attic and looked back at the cabin. The building seemed to crumble and fall apart in large chunks, turning to dust, until Hallie stood alone in the bare patch of ground. Alone, Hallie left the woods. And that was The Orb Weaver by Alfred Alley. A good reminder not to befriend strange men in the woods, myself included. Me, I'm harmless. Just don't bend over in front of Chester for a couple of months. A little about the author. Alfred Alley is a horror author and disgraced paranormal investigator. You can find his horror comedy novels Apartment 239 and its sequel High Strangeness on Amazon. His short story collections Ash and Bone, Last Night in the Damned House, Find Us, and We Will Find a Place for You are available from Velox Books in print and audio. He enjoys folklore, looking for monsters, and exploring weird places. You can also check out his website for updates at alfredalley.com. Thanks, Elford. And thanks to Velox Books, publisher of High Octane Nightmare Fuel. Check out their website, www.veloxbooks.com, for your next great read.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, friend, and stay on the road, will you? It's dark in these here woods. And if Chester gets a hold of you, spiders will be the least of your problems. So may the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. Don't go burning your retinas out this Monday. If you do, go fuck yourself. Good night, y'all.